Hello, I'm Ray Wright, founder and CEO of Benchmarket, and your host of the Metrics That Measure Up podcast. We talk to a wide variety of the top B2B SaaS and cloud thought leaders, CEOs, executives, investors, and people just like you to discuss the metrics and benchmarks they use to make metrics-informed and benchmark-validated decisions. Now, on to today's show. Welcome to the Metrics That Measure Up podcast. Today, I am joined by Michael DeFilippo, the Chief Financial Officer at Invoca. Today, we'll be covering four areas with Michael. First, how Michael has seen the B2B SaaS CFO role evolve over the last few years. Second, how Michael uses performance metrics to manage and report on his business. Third, how Michael uses performance metrics and the annual planning and budgeting process. And fourth, Michael's vision for how the B2B SaaS CFO role will evolve as we go forward. Michael, thank you so much for being here at Metrics to Measure Up and give a brief overview of your journey to becoming our guest.
Sure, thank you. Thanks, Ray, for the invite. I really appreciate it. In terms of my own background, I grew up in the business facing kind of FP&A ranks. I didn't enter the workforce like as a CPA or in investment banking or consulting. So my profile is, you know, I started working for companies in these business facing finance roles, and I've done those types of jobs my entire career. I have done, like, within those companies, I have done early on some accounting roles, some treasury roles, internal audit type roles, which, you know, I think helped to round me out professionally. But ultimately, it led to FP&A, VP finance, CFO type work. I landed my first tech CFO role over 20 years ago. It was during the internet boom of 1999, 2000, and technology really captured my interest. And then, I guess, more even specifically, I landed my first SaaS CFO role nearly 15 years ago now with a company called MuleSoft. And I immediately fell in love with the recurring revenue business model, just kind of the math behind it. And since then, I've worked exclusively, entirely in SaaS recurring revenue type businesses.
Well, MuleSoft was not a bad first recurring revenue business to be at. Led to a very successful acquisition by Salesforce. So congratulations, Michael.
Yeah, it was great. I was there in the very early days. There were 25 people, and we were doing like $250,000 a month in recurring revenue. So it was early days. It was very, very interesting and just pleasing to see how well that company turned out. And Greg Schott, the CEO, you know, in my own opinion, kind of just single-handedly dragged that thing across the finish line. Really, really, really an impressive CEO.
Well, I want to just go back a little bit. We're going to spend a lot of time on where a B2B SaaS CFO is evolving to, but I found it interesting that you started outside of the technology industry. In fact, you were in an industrial manufacturing business, DuPont, then you were in the consumer food industry, and then your first kind of foray that I saw from your LinkedIn profile was at Symbol Technologies. So tell me a little bit about that journey and what made you pivot outside of traditional industries into a B2B tech industry?
So DuPont did a very nice job for me early career, rotating me around into very different roles. I had, you know, four, five, six different roles in the time that I was there. My last job that they put me into in 2000 was a newly formed business unit that was commercializing flat panel display technology. It was actually OLEDs, which is funny because OLEDs are like finally, like today, kind of all the rage. But we were literally 20 years ago trying to commercialize OLED technology. And that's really where I got kind of the tech bug. The company hired an executive from, this will date me, you'll recognize it, Ray, from Compaq Computer to run that business. And then he subsequently later left DuPont and he joined a standalone public technology company called Symbol Technologies. And he then hired me to work for him. And since that time, I've been with technology businesses ever since.
you know, I'm not going to go back into my history, but I did grow up at GE and I was in their technology division called information services. So, and boy, did they teach me a lot about how to run a business using financial metrics.
Absolutely. A great place. GE is the gold standard, right? That's just a great place. And I felt that way about my experience at DuPont. It was just a great place to be kind of born and raised as an aspiring finance accounting type person. I don't know how much I'd love it today, but for those kind of formative years right out of the chute, I'm forever grateful for that experience.
Let me talk about one of the things that you experienced and I know I experienced, and that was kind of almost a rotational program where you did so many different things during your early days as a financial leader. Do you think that's something we in the B2B SaaS industry might need to do more of with some of our entry-level finance people as we scale, is give them that cross-functional opportunity, maybe 6 to 12 month assignments?
I certainly ascribe to that, and I'm very much a function of that, right? It was in two different stints because I was at DuPont before and after business school. So it was 10 years that I was there. I was a cost accountant. I was a compensation and benefits analyst. I was on the capital markets desk in the treasury group. I ran an internal audit team overseas, right? And so they just did not hesitate to throw lots of different things at me. And I can speak for myself. I haven't been in internal audit for a long time. I haven't been in treasury for a long time, but those experiences at least familiarized me with all of those different functions such that I feel relatively, kind of comfortable being responsible for them now as a CFO. So for me, I found that rotational experience very valuable. I do find it interesting today in kind of today's world. I almost kind of sense a resistance from folks around moving into other functions. And at least for my own team, I will do a fair amount of cajoling to try to get people to consider doing other things, even outside of finance. You can be, an assignment in marketing, an assignment in sales operations, an assignment in customer success, an assignment like those can make you a better CFO to kind of walk a mile in corp dev, sort of in those shoes. So I believe that those sorts of rotational assignments, certainly early on in a career, can only help round out your experience and help prepare somebody for a financial leadership role someday. I'm a big believer in that.
Yeah, and we'll get into this, but I have this belief about the CFO becoming more of a strategic growth leader, not just a expense control. And that's not fair because that's not what a CFO has ever been. But you have the accounting kind of path and you have the FP&A path. And I see more and more CFOs being that strategic member of the executive team that's helping shepherd in durable, efficient growth.
I agree. And I see that in terms of the conversations that I have with my colleagues at the executive team level and with my CEO. I observe, the conversations that I'm having today versus what I had 10, 15, 20 years ago. And also I see it in the calls that I get from executive recruiters in terms of, it's not that I see a lot of COO opportunities or a lot of CEO opportunities, but I see more than I did, kind of back in the day, so to speak, where I was, kind of exclusively being looked at for finance type gigs.
Let's double click on that. So almost 15 years since you started the CFO role at MuleSoft, right? So how have you seen the CFO role, including the expectations of a CFO, evolve over that time frame? And then if we could put a real spotlight on the last year and a half to 2 years with this new back to basics, has it changed even more?
Yeah. So there were two questions there. So if I start with kind of over the longer time frame, what have I observed? I think the scope of the role has gotten broader over time. So earlier in my career, when I started getting VP finance and or CFO roles, the role encompassed finance and accounting only. Over time, what I've seen is within the roles, at least that I've had, I can speak for myself, the scope of those roles have expanded to include different combinations of other functions in addition to finance. So, for example, legal, IT, HR, business systems, facilities, corp dev, even sales ops. At MuleSoft, I ran all of the G&A functions and sales ops. Here at Invoca, for example, I run all of the G&A functions with the exception of human resources, which reports directly to our CEO. But I've observed that where it feels like, and I'm happy to do whatever kind of my CEO wants. If you know he or she wants me to run finance, that's great. If they want me to run lots of other things, that's fine too. I feel kind of comfortable enough flexing into it. I think we touched on this a little while ago. I think one of the other changes is I just feel that my role has grown in more of an advisory sense with the CEO and the executive team. I'm just finding myself involved and or invited into more broad-based business discussions, which could have financial kind of impacts or not, but it could be people-related, strategy, geographic expansion, product development, whatever. And you know, I think versus in the older days, it would have been more like, oh, this is an accounting topic. I got to bring Mike D in. I'm finding myself getting pulled into more kind of like broader-based business stuff, which for me, it might not be for everybody, but I get a kick out of that stuff. So I enjoy it and kind of welcome the opportunity.
You know, one of the things that's really evolved over the last few years is just the revenue operations function, right? Getting all the process automation and the data that finance has to use. And now people are talking about FinOps or financial operations. How do you view that relationship between the revenue operations, the people who have a lot of the data that you need for better prediction, forecasting, and planning, and the finance organization? Where's that integration point?
The integration point at Invoca primarily exists between my FP&A team and the sales ops team is where it resides. We kick this around on occasion. We don't have a formal RevOps function today, but certainly RevOps type work is happening kind of in different bits. And my FP&A team is, if you will, kind of like putting requirements on those other groups in terms of information, data formats, whatever technology integrations, you know, that we need to be able to effectively report on the business. But that's where I primarily kind of see those, you know, whether it's a department or whether it's just work, where I see those kind of those work streams interacting is there.
Gotcha. I'm going to pivot to a very different topic, and that is, this is the Metrics at Measure Up podcast. So we're going to talk about how you use metrics. And I'd like to look at it from two lenses. One is, are there certain metrics that you really lean upon for internal discussion and decision-making to gain more operational efficiency, higher growth? So that's the first question. And then the second is, are there different metrics that you prioritize for reporting out to your board and investors?
So if I start with what we talk about at the executive team, I'm thinking about, we have a dashboard that we use that we maintain in Salesforce that we refer to during our weekly executive team meetings. And if I think about the information that we're discussing and referring to on that exec team dashboard, I think it's more, I call it more forward-looking metrics. Certainly we have like a little widget for ACV bookings and churn, like which are more kind of backward-looking measures, but a lot of what's in there are, we're talking about pipeline generation, open pipeline, SDR tee-ups, like SDR conversations that become stage zero opportunities, at least within our Salesforce parlance, sales qualified opportunities. What are the top deals that we're chasing? What are red accounts? So I think from an executive team level, at least on an ongoing basis, we have monthly and quarterly forums as well. But from like a kind of like keeping the wheels on the bus, how do things run on an ongoing basis as an executive team, I think we're talking more about the leading indicators that will help drive, at the end of the day, what we're all about is ARR growth. ARR growth is what matters. It's the single most, I lecture our company on this every month together when we get together at an all hands. ARR growth is the single most important financial outcome that we need to care about. And we always very basically break it down. We basically break it down. We have a little motto that we call book more, churn less. Like, that's it. There's nothing really overly complicated about our revenue model. There's lots of things that go underneath how to book more, and there's lots of things that go underneath how to churn less. But at the end of the day, that's kind of what we're all about. And that's how we talk about the business, at least on an ongoing basis with the execs. With the board, we meet with the board quarterly at a minimum. And our operations deck, the metrics that we share there are more, I guess I would call them backwards looking. So again, ACV bookings, what's our exit ARR, both for the total business and we have a, you know, we have a piece of our business that we call core, GAAP revenue, retention, both gross and net, adjusted EBITDA margins, free cash flow, customer count, gross margin, rule of 40, kind of all sort of very, I don't know, very typical, but like those are the kind of the primary financial metrics and more kind of backward looking. We'll then get into discussions with the board around what's driving this, that, or the other thing, which may cause us to get into pipeline or top deals or red accounts that's maybe causing changes with some of those financial outcomes. But that's, I think, kind of how I distinguish between this, you know, the information that we're discussing primarily as a leadership team versus what we're sharing at a board level.
Let me ask you about some of the go-to-market operational efficiency metrics, things like CAC payback period or customer lifetime value to CAC. Is that something you or the executive team really focus on? And I know that they're lagging indicators, but investors often like to know about those.
No, we certainly do. We measure CAC payback. We attempt to attempt customer acquisition payback. We take those words literally. So we think about that from a new logo perspective. It's funny, that was really driven more by my CEO, where I was talking about CAC payback and using like total bookings and total sales and marketing. And he's like, well, that includes upsell. You're not acquiring any customers. So within Invoca, he's right. And inside Invoca, we're referring to CAC payback. It's the efficiency with which we're getting new logos. And then we also have something that we've termed total sales and marketing efficiency, which is a function of total bookings, whether it's upsell or new logo, and total sales and marketing. And then actually, we even have kind of two variations of that. We use one where it's literally just sales and marketing, but then we also use one that includes that portion of customer success that goes into the sales and marketing line.
Oh, well, you're talking my language, but so because I always promote.
This is why I pepper you with so many questions when you're doing one of your webcasts, because there's just so many kind of nuances in terms of how you can measure it. And so anyway, yeah, it can be a podcast in and of itself.
Yeah, David Spitz, who kind of was the creator of the KeyBank annual survey, I'm a disciple of his, and I love looking at blended CAC ratio, which looks at all new and expansion ARR divided into total sales and marketing costs, the new CAC ratio, which just looks at that sales and marketing cost allocation to the pursuit of new logos divided by new logo ARR. And then I even love expansion CAC ratio, which looks at expansion ARR divided into sales, marketing, and a percentage of CS costs allocated to existing customer expansion. Do you do expansion CAC ratio or something like that?
We do not. I can understand the value in doing it. We don't. I feel comfortable enough with the allocations that we do to derive new logo CAC. I suppose I could come up with something I could get comfortable with on the expansion side, but it's not something we do today. It's a good thing for us to ponder.
Got you. So last question, kind of as a B2B SaaS CFO, and that is the next 2-3 years, maybe even out to 5 years. You talked about how your roles evolved, and part of that might be experience. Part of it, I think, is also the industry's kind of elevation of the CFO to a more strategic member of the executive team. Where do you see it going over the next few years, Michael?
I don't know if I see major kind of seismic shifts coming. I think we'll continue to be relied upon more and more for benchmarking across all business functions. I think what I've observed in the past couple of few years, I've been at Invoca, it's coming up on 4 years. And certainly here, it feels to me like the quality and quantity of benchmarking data has greatly improved very recently. And so I expect more of that kind of in the future. And I think it's a natural place to fall on my team to be able to do those sorts of benchmarking, whether it's just overall company financial benchmarking or stuff relating to, you know, sales or customer success or product development. I think we'll be kind of doing more and more of that as just more and more of this kind of data becomes available for us to be able to report on. I'll also, you know, this is more speaking for me. I think I'll be continuing to explore more AI use cases within finance and accounting. I will admit, for me personally, I haven't seen much that really knocks my socks off yet, but I do kind of like understand the potential benefit of that technology. And I think there will be more and more. And ultimately, maybe I'm just old, and I'm sure something ultimately will kind of strike me, but I think there's going to be probably more and more in, you know, I think kind of in that direction as well. And then if I think of one other item, and is that I think I can see me or my role in general kind of more and more relieving the CEO of more and more relieving more investor relations and like board communication and investor communication type obligations. I do a fair amount of that today. I do more of that than I did, you know, in prior roles. And I think, you know, that will be, I think kind of that will kind of continue to increase in terms of the reliance on my role for, you know, for that type of work as well.
Yeah, I'm going to take it a step further. And I think it's because I grew up in a non-tech company for my first 10 years. As our industry matures, I think CFOs are going to not only assume that president COO role more, but I think we're going to see 10 years from now, a lot more CEOs growing up through the finance organization versus growing up in R&D or one of the go-to-market functions. What do you think about that prediction?
I buy into that prediction. It ties back to, you know, some of the executive recruiting calls that I get looking more and more for that kind of hybrid CFO, COO type of type role. So I can definitely, I mean, it's a bit self-serving for me to say it, but I can definitely buy into that. You know, even you see it in the profiles, even when you're just presented with a normal CFO role, it's every single time it feels like, you know, CEO is looking for a business partner, looking for someone to really help run the business, looking for someone to maybe evolve into the COO role one day. So I think your prediction is certainly not a bad, I think it could possibly happen.
You know, the title I never liked was CAO, the Chief Administrative Officer. That just felt like it didn't convey the strategic importance of that role, right? It's administrative.
I love GNA. I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of GNA. I understand your point on the title, but I do love these back office functions. But I think what you and I are talking about is even beyond that, is actually kind of the operations of the company. Could get into stuff like RevOps, could get into you know, different types of operational type roles that are happening all over the company, not just within the GNA function.
Let's give the listening audience a chance to get to know Michael a little bit better as a person through three quick questions I ask every guest here. So number one, is there a CEO or CFO that you think is a must follow today?
Oh, yeah, I guess there's a couple. I'm a big fan of Elon Musk. I don't think I'd like working for him. I think he'd make me crazy, but he just kind of blows me away with his ability to focus on so many different things at one time. So I do get a kick out of him. I'm also a fan of the CEO at Coinbase, Brian Armstrong. It's sort of off topic. He's been very definitive on not wanting his company to get involved in kind of the social topic of the day. I think he's very much a fan of just like not wanting to pick sides. And I have respect for everybody on both sides of almost every argument, at least I do. But it also kind of confuses me when I see companies try to enter the fray. And I just prefer his approach. It's just my own subjective opinion. Lots of people might disagree with me, but I like his approach to that. From a CFO perspective, I don't know who the CFO at Five9 is, but my joke with my CEO that I have a CFO crush on Five9. I very much admire their quarterly earnings updates and analyst presentations. I very much admire how they very clearly communicate their path to the Rule of 40, and how they're very thoughtful around, you know, it's not a very high gross margin business, and it's not a business that's growing, you know, 75-80% per year. But in spite of that, they have very thoughtfully over time become a very consistent rule of 40 business by very kind of thoughtfully thinking about their P&L and what each line item as a percentage of revenue needs to be and how they're getting there. I admire it. I don't know who their CFO is, but like I said, I have a CFO crush on that company. I like the way they talk about it.
You know, I just did a LinkedIn search while we were talking, and the CFO is Bob Murphy, but I don't know Bob's. I have to reach out and see if I can get him to join you on the podcast.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be a little bit like, yeah, I'd be a little fan.
Got you. Well, I've seen, and I work with Ben Murray, the SaaS CFO, and he does his finance tech stack survey every year. And it looks like, especially over the last couple of years, finance is investing a lot more in tools to improve communication, maybe get quicker closes, better visibility. Is there a tool or a category that you think every company in their finance department should be using?
So there are the obvious ones, right? There's the, you know, the NetSuites, the Salesforces stuff, which are, you know, which are all great services. Some other ones that come to mind is they might somehow either be a, I think, do you know OpEx Engine, the service that—
I know Lauren Kelly, the founder, very well, and she really was a pioneer in benchmarking the B2B SaaS industry.
Yeah, so we're finding that to be a super helpful service. It's a new company. We're a pretty new customer, probably less than 6 months in, but I'm finding that service to be really interesting and helpful from a benchmarking perspective. I think another one that comes to mind is from a cap table perspective. We use ShareWorks, whether it's ShareWorks or Carta, but fully implementing one of these tools so that, you know, option exercises are fully automated. You know, in the back office perspective, stock option accounting just kind of happens, reporting. I think for, you know, newer companies or newer CFOs to get a proper cap table tool in there is just really good from a hygiene and from a process perspective. We use a tool called Clary that somehow, I don't know, sits on top of Salesforce or runs with Salesforce that I use a lot for funnel metrics and funnel changes, what's happening, what's falling out of the funnel, what's coming into the funnel, being able to drill down to an opportunity level. I very much like that Clary service that we have, and it just helps kind of add to, excuse me, all the value we get out of Salesforce. And then one last one, sort of off topic, not really like necessarily SaaS related, but we use an employee engagement tool. It's now owned by Workday, but it's called Peakon. It was its own startup. Workday ultimately bought it, but we measure employee engagement. I think we do it twice a month. We send out a quick, like kind of 2-minute survey, 1-minute survey even, and where people are responding to specific questions, and they can also type in kind of brief form comments. I find that service very helpful. It helps me kind of keep a pulse on how my broader team is feeling. There's, I don't know, 35, 40 people across the various functions that I run that report into me. So I find it very useful to just kind of stay on top of how folks are feeling, what they're talking about, how they're responding to kind of certain questions, certain categories. So it's just as a leader, I guess, I find that service very useful.
Let me double click on Clary. Are you using it for your forecasting also, Michael?
Mm-hmm.
And do you separate new business forecasting separate from existing customer expansion, or do you do it on an aggregate basis?
No, we separate it. We separate it. Yeah, we separate it in terms of new and upsell, in terms of our forecasting. And then the other thing we're doing, I forget exactly how far along we've gotten with Clary on it, but you know, I worked at Citrix in their go-to business, the video collaboration thing, like the stuff that competes with Zoom. And that was an SMB go-to-market thing, right? So we had 700,000 customers paying us, you know, $1,000 a year or something, if all that math works. So we had tons and tons of customers. And so you could just use data. You could just be like, you know, you could look at a funnel, you could apply percentages. Invoca is an enterprise business. So we're still to some material extent, we're still driven by the whale deal. So the other way in which we kind of sort of separate Clary, or we kind of like think about Clary and utilize Clary for what I'll call more of our run rate business. And then we think about kind of the big deals separately. Because it's not like you're going to close 25% of a big deal. You're either going to get it or you're not. So for us, we kind of have it split that way too, in addition to looking at it, new logo versus upsell.
That's really smart, because with those regular deals, you have more transactional data, so they get the machine learning algorithms learn quicker. And those whale deals, you're right, it's yes or no.
It's yes or no, right? Exactly. Exactly. It's like it's binary. It's much more binary. So we kind of think about those outside of what the black box is indicating for us, and then we kind of layer that in terms of doing our case.
Okay. And then the last question. We have a lot of early career finance professionals who listen to the show. So if you were talking to maybe a senior at college or a first or second year finance person, what advice would you give them if their ultimate goal is to become a SaaS CFO in 10, 15 years?
Thanks. So yeah, I guess a few things come to mind. When we talk about it, I'd encourage that person not to specialize, you know, especially early career, rotate around, go see different stuff, both within finance and accounting and outside of it. I think another one that comes to mind is, you know, we're in fiduciary roles. And I think one thing I've learned to do better as I've gotten older is to pick the right battle. Like, what really matters versus what's annoying, but okay. Like, I'll still kind of laugh at myself. Topics will come up today where I'm like, oh, it's fine. I think it's kind of goofy, but it's fine. Whereas, you know, 20 years ago, I would have fought to the death, like over that topic. Like, I'll laugh at myself in that way. I think another, this is kind of more fatherly advice, directly answer the question. This is not Congress. Yes or no works. Like, it's just answer the question that's asked. Don't dance around topics. People will respond favorably to just kind of straight answers that answer the question that's being asked. One last one is, I'd encourage people to be very thoughtful and intentional around how you define everything, like even obvious measures like, and you know this better than me, right? ARR, ACV, G&A expense. There is not a single definition, much less CAC and some of these other kind of more second order type measures. So, you know, just be very thoughtful and intentional about how you define all of those, especially if you want to be able to compare yourself to other companies. You need to get an understanding. You need to be able to be comfortable enough that you're doing an apples to apples comparison. It may not be like Granny Smith, the Granny Smith apple, but at least get it to like Golden Delicious versus Granny Smith, where you get it close enough, where you feel kind of comfortable enough. Because there are, like I said, even G&A expense, right? Like, we allocate facilities expenses out to the other departments outside of G&A. Everybody does that. There's different ways in which you can measure gross margin. How do you handle cap R&D? ARR, what are you really putting in there versus what are you not putting in there? So there's lots of kind of nuances in there, and just really be very thoughtful about that would be kind of like my last bit of advice.
Got you. Well, Michael DeFilippo, CFO at Invoca, thank you so much for being my guest here on the Metrics of Measure Up podcast.
Ray, thanks. I enjoyed the time. Hopefully this was kind of useful for your listeners, and I appreciate being invited. Thank you.
Being able to hear from someone with your track record of success and valuable. And to our listening audience, if you're enjoying our guests and the topics like we discussed with Michael today on the Metrics of Measure Up podcast, you'd mean the world to us to go ahead and subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcasting app. Go ahead and provide us that 5-star rating. It makes me feel so good. But it also helps you with the distribution and the viral impact of the Metrics of Measure Up podcast. Thank you, Michael, and thank you to our listening audience.
Thank you. Thank you, Ray. Great job. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to today's Metrics to Measure Up podcast. If you would like to learn more about B2B SaaS metrics and benchmarks, please visit revopsquared.com.